Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Adela Barnes, welcome to my show, Adela, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul, Channel 5, where we will get up close with our radio guests. Good evening. This is Adela Barnes.
This is Gary Collins, the second calling from Plain, Michigan.
Hi, Gary.
Hi. And who is this? Who is tonight's guest?
Tonight's guest is going to be Anna Maria Horsford.
I've got a question for Anna Marie.
Okay, she's not with us yet, but would you like to share what that question is so that when she arrives we can ask her?
No problem. Were you, okay, Anna Marie, were you a fan of the show The Jeffersons, starring Sherman Hemsley and Marla Gibbs?
We will certainly ask her that when she arrives.
Be blessed.
Okay, thank you.
And our guest is here.
Excellent. Anna
Hi,
Maria.
Yes.
Welcome.
How are you?
Excellent. Glad
Good.
To have you. All right. And I'd like to start with our quote. We always start the show, Adela, with a quote.
Okay.
And our quote for today is, every one of us is a wonder. Every one of us has a story. That was the American writer Kristen Hunter. And so it is.
Yes.
And
I have something to add to that quote, too.
Oh, do you?
When
you want to add it
talking.
Now? You want to add it now?
Well, I can add it now. And the people you meet are supposed to help turn the pages of that book that you come with.
Yes. Yes. And people do. And so
they should.
Is. Absolutely. So certainly, Anna Maria, you are a wonder. And you have a story to tell. Your
Many.
Background, yes. And just for those who may want to know this, and may already, that you have a background as an actor, a director, and a producer. You're also best known for your portrayal of Thelma Fry on the series A-Man,
mm-hmm.
that ran 5 seasons on NBC,
mm-hmm.
and that you're now a regular on your 6th TV series, Read Between the Lines on BET.
Right.
Of course, I'm speaking of none other than you, Miss Anna Maria Horsford. Again, welcome to Adela. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you, darling.
Yay. Now, before we talk about your career, let us first go back to the beginning. Where do you hail from? Where
Harlem,
were you born
New
and
York.
Raised? Harlem, New York. And how was it growing up in Harlem?
I have to say it was quite magnificent to get to know oneself in an all-black community. And I say all-black, but we had, it was a very diversified community, too, because we had doctors and lawyers and of different nationalities and religion. I mean, Dr. Lambert was a good family friend. Those were the years when doctors used to make house calls.
Yes.
So he used to come over. I don't know what kind of business him and my mother and father had, because he was there often, and none of us were sick. Now that I'm thinking about it, what was he doing over there? He was
right.
really a friend.
Right.
Yeah, and we had a lot of Italian people. My parents were immigrants, and interestingly enough, they attracted a large group of different people. And at the time, you know, Harlem, people see it as one thing. We had a German photographer who had a studio there that we used to go and take our yearly pictures every year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was a lot of different people.
So you really grew up with a sense of diversity and at the same time with a strong sense of an African-American community.
Oh, yeah, you had to. I mean, there was no, you couldn't help that.
Right, right, right. Now, you were really blessed to have a two-parent home. We don't see that as much today as we did during the time that you and I came up.
Yeah.
And you were a little bit ahead of me because you already mentioned that your parents were from the islands. Which
mm-hmm.
islands were they from?
My mother was born and raised in Santo Domingo,
mm-hmm.
and my father was from the British West Indies, Antigua.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and they met in New York.
Ah.
They met in New York. Two people that were so opposite, you kept wondering, what did they see in each other?
Well, oftentimes opposites do attract.
Yeah, she saw a very tall, handsome guy. She said he was wearing his spats, and he tried to have a little accent. And she was set up on a blind date. And he came in early, and she said, well, I don't think I'm interested in the blind date. I want him. But he was the blind date. He was the blind date.
Isn't that funny?
So that was supposed to be for her. And I think she was looking for the kind of gentleman who could make her dreams come true for what she wanted to do with her children, if she ever had any.
Wow. And it sounds like he certainly did that.
Yeah, he provided. He was a dreamer. And I was just telling a friend today, I said, even if if one doesn't have a dream, you better attach yourself to somebody who does.
Ah.
And then you can get credit.
Ah.
For helping the dream come true.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, you can't be a dream killer, though.
No, you cannot.
No, he had a big imagination and was willing to work very hard. And his dreams came true.
You know, I found it so interesting when I was doing my research on you in reference to your father, him being a realtor and also being the first black owner of a supermarket in Harlem. That
yeah.
is amazing.
Yeah.
He was truly an entrepreneur.
He started out with one grocery store, and then he got another one, and then he decided he wanted to do a supermarket.
Mm.
And so at our height, he had three stores going, and
wow.
He was always investing in real estate. But when you come from sometimes those kind of small little countries, everybody owned housing.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't a big leap in terms of let me own this, because you always owned whether it was a shack,
mm-hmm.
you know, or a house. He wasn't rich. He was not rich, but as a young boy, I guess, again, it's setting your goal somewhere.
Yes.
And there's nobody telling you it's impossible for it to come true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It might come true, it might not, but the deal is you have to set one.
And you have to really try to make it happen.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he achieved that.
But the universe tries to make it happen. You have a partner with the universe.
That's correct.
You really do. You know, most of the time when dreams don't come true is because the person wasn't dreaming.
There you go. There you go. Now, you know, I also found it interesting that your father was a Garveyite.
Yes.
And for those listeners who may be wondering, what is a Garveyite? Of course, we had Marcus Garvey and his Back to Africa movement that
yes.
began in the 1920s. And just to put a little history in here,
yes.
he actually formed the Universal Negro Improvement Association, which was the largest mass movement in African-American history. He
yes.
had followers in the United States.
No, all over the world.
In South America, in
yeah.
Africa, in Great Britain. I mean, that is just
yeah.
huge.
It really is
accomplish.
When you think about it, and Stanley Nelson Jr. did a documentary on it, you wonder how in the world, without a computer, without television, how did you do that?
How
you know,
did you do
let's
that?
Talk about the talking drum.
That was exactly
it must
what
have
he
been
had.
Beating. My mother said that in Santo Domingo, our mother used to give her a penny on Sunday to go to the meeting hall. I guess they were large assembly halls.
Uh-huh.
Where you, even if you didn't go, you sent your children to hear him speak about the proudness of being black. And his company started the Black Dolls, and they started many black businesses. But he spoke words that I guess at a time when nobody else was speaking them, that you were, you know, because you were black and you were poor and you were supposedly underclass and underprivileged, and he said, oh, no, you are a fabulous, fabulous human being.
He knew who he was.
Well, he knew about something, the secret, and everybody
and
wanted to hear the secret.
Yes,
because if you can
hope.
Gather, yeah, if you
he
can gather
hope.
That many people, you're resonating something
yes.
in the hearts of and the minds of people.
That's right.
I mean,
and
that is really interesting because nobody has done it since that time.
Not on that scale, certainly.
No. No, and now we have everything that you definitely makes it much easier to do it.
That's correct, in terms of being able to communicate with the world.
Yep.
In a matter of moments.
Yes, yes.
Now,
so,
your father also lived in Liberia for 5 years.
Well, he
years.
Went back. It was the Back to Africa movement, and he actually went back. He wanted to start a bus company.
Wow.
But there was another family that had the contract.
So now, he went then, obviously, before he married your mother and
yes.
had children. Is that
he
correct?
Had another. Oh, no. He had another wife.
Oh, okay.
And she had 2 children, and in fact, the baby was very young, and the baby died of malaria.
Hmm.
And so they buried the baby there, and that wife said, I'm out of here.
Hmm.
And she came back. And my sister, Lorraine, who we had a close relationship with, she came back with the mother. And then he eventually came back about 5 years after and met my mother. And then he returned back to Liberia 60 years after, supposedly to get the bones of his baby girl.
That is powerful.
Yeah.
So did he get the bones?
No, there was a house on it, and I knew the Tolberts, who were the president at the time, and I asked my friend, who I had met, who was a student at Columbia, if he could write to the father and the this, that, and the other and get it. Because it was a guy that my father, this is really an interesting story, a gentleman, a friend of his, who had heard my father had died. And he said he didn't believe it, so he paid tax on the land for like maybe 30 years, 30-something years. And when my father went back.
But your father was still very much alive, right?
He saw him, and he said, I didn't believe you were dead. He said, I just stopped paying tax on that piece of land.
Isn't that
interesting?
Wow.
The guy was so happy. He said, because my father had got robbed in one of his stores, and he got shot. And the guy said, Victor, there was a rumor you had died, and I didn't believe it. So I paid your tax every year.
Amazing.
Isn't that a story?
That's quite a story. So what happened with the land?
Somebody else had taken it.
Hmm.
Somebody else had taken it. So he was very disheartened, let me say that.
Yes.
And he went to Ghana and adopted a baby girl.
Oh, my.
Crazy. Insane. My mother said, why are you adopting a child at this point?
And
he said,
he
wanted to educate a child. And
so
he brought her back.
Where is that child now?
I saw her. She went back to Ghana.
Yeah.
And she has twins, and it continues.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now tell me this. How did your father's sensibilities as a proud black man influence how you saw yourself and how you came to see the world, since he had such a consciousness around his blackness?
Well, you know, it happens unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you believe what your parents tell you.
Yes.
And someone said one day, he said, it's amazing how you think so much of yourself. And I said, huh? He said, well, considering, you know how you look. And I said, huh?
What does that mean?
Well, you know what? I learned, or not learned, to ask people their business about me.
Okay.
I was always more concerned with my business about me.
All right.
I really was. I mean, again, you don't even know that. I don't take insults very well because I figured you have to know me to insult me.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know me, you really can't insult me.
And clearly,
you know,
it's
interesting that I remember overhearing my father say something about, you see how pretty Anna is because of her long neck.
Mm.
And I said, interesting. I didn't know long necks were pretty. So you learn,
you listen.
You
had to go look in the mirror and see about this
most children
long
do,
neck,
yeah.
Right? Yes.
And so I realize now, even at this age, I still always adorn my neck.
Mm.
So it comes subconsciously. You have to be around people who think you are something.
Yes.
And I'm lucky that they thought I was something. Sometimes we're not always blessed with parents who know the beauty of a child, of a newborn.
Yes. Yes.
And they don't. And that's okay, but you have to find an audience that does.
Yes.
Apart from them, if they don't, because I think each child comes knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets chipped away as time goes on,
mm-hmm.
if you allow it.
If you're not around people that build
your
sense of
if you allow it. There are people who are just arrogant based on something they know, their own inner truth. So
mm-hmm.
they don't have to wait for the outside to give it
mm-hmm.
credibility.
Exactly. Now tell me this.
Yes.
How did your mother influence you growing up? We've spoken about your father. What about your mother?
She was the kindest. I always used to call her Mother Teresa's sister. Because she was kind to everybody. She, boy, and if you had a sad story, she would adopt you. She would adopt you. She would meet people. There's a Marquetta on 116th Street and would always talk to people because she was bilingual. So she would talk to everybody and this and that. Little teeny lady.
Mm.
And the people she picked up, that she would adopt whole families. She met some man, he had 10 children. You know, Christmas, each child had gifts and she would cook. And it's very interesting.
Very gracious and giving.
Very gracious. She was poor. And I guess there's some people who grow up poor, and when they dream about having money, their fantasy is giving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she took more groceries out of my poor father's supermarket to give to people.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
But I guess it's all about how you define being poor.
Or
clearly
being rich.
Rich.
I think when she got rich, she gave.
Mm-hmm.
There was a box, a crate. She used to send a crate twice a year back to her cousins in St. Martin and Aruba and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one cousin told me after many years, he says, you have no idea how much we love, you know, Cousin Lillian. I said, really? He said, we would wait for those crates and they would feed us for 6 months.
Isn't that amazing?
And the shoes and the this, because we had to give away our clothes that we outgrew and the shoes and would sit in the hall.
Mm.
And all of her cousin's children became very wealthy businessmen.
Wow.
Yeah, but they knew, and I kept saying, is there a creed that you all get when you leave that you have to send stuff back home? And, I mean, you see,
and
most immigrants
do
that.
Not just ours. There are many cultures who do the same.
Many cultures.
That's
it's a responsibility that they definitely know. You give the less
back.
Fortunate.
To give back, yes.
You know?
Now tell me this, are there brothers and sisters, are there other children, did any go into entertainment or just...
No. Well, my sister was the director of publicity for Columbia Pictures for many years, and then she stopped and she went into real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's in real estate. I'm very proud to say I have nephews and nieces who are doing very well in real estate. who obviously were very influenced by my father.
I'm sure of that.
And I, again, it's interesting because you don't really know about how you really give the message to
and
your grandkids. You know, you take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
And how you're influencing others.
Yeah, you don't
by
know.
Doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you really honestly don't know. If you're lucky enough, you live long enough and somebody says, oh, I remember that day you did so-and-so. You know, and you say, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Or you said this to me.
And
you
may not
know.
Even remember it and probably don't remember it.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily for you to remember. When you start remembering, the ego takes over.
There you go.
Because I don't think we're in charge of that. I think there's a force that makes us do certain things and say certain things and happen to be certain places.
Mm-hmm.
And you meet your students in the strangest places. Because I think we're all students and we're all teachers and students.
We're both.
Yeah.
I remember years ago I was with my son and there was a place that we would go to regularly, and there was a janitor. He would see me all the time with my son. He'd see me with
uh-huh.
my books and my papers, and I'd be writing. And he said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a teacher. And he said, then you're a student.
Oh.
And I never forgot that. I said, it was very humbling. And I realized in that moment that those of us who are teachers really are students because
yeah.
we're learning from those that we
right.
are imparting information to.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody, like you said in the beginning, everybody has stories.
That's
and
true.
What we do in those kind of environments is that it has to be an exchange. The best teachers make you feel good.
Yes, yes.
They're
we're gonna
so
take a
happy.
Moment. Yes, we're going to take a moment for a station
okay.
identification. For those of you who are just now joining us, you're listening to Adila on the BlakeRadio.com station, and my guest today is actor Miss Anna Maria Horsford. Well, we're going to shift gears. I'd like to talk now about your career, and thank you so much for sharing a little bit about your family.
Ooh, I'm going to
so that off. Those who are listening have a stronger sense of your person.
Yes.
It's one thing to have a public image, but it's another to learn about someone's person. And shifting gears here, I know that you attended both the New York School for the Performing Arts
yes.
and the Manhattan School for the Arts. How did that come about, and how did each serve you in terms of your training as an actor?
That was probably the best training ground because you're 13 years old when you go to high school, and you're very open. And you believe everything the teacher says. And it's a very intensive course, and you probably don't get it anywhere else. That was the only school in America like that at the time. And this is in the 60s. And we had makeup. We had voice and diction. We had scene study. You had every single thing you needed to be a well-educated actor.
So essentially it was a conservatory.
Yeah.
In terms of a well-rounded training.
Oh, extremely. And you listened and you believed, so you worked very hard. And if somebody has your instrument at 13, from 13 on to 16 to 17, 18, you have a very fine-tuned instrument.
Yes,
the interesting
yes.
thing is that it was, you had three majors, dance, music, and acting. I was the drama major, and I was the only one who got into performing arts from my junior high school, Wadley.
Highly competitive.
Very, you know. I mean, school in Manhattan is still highly competitive. There's not enough. There's not enough. Unfortunately, when they open up more, sometimes the standard gets lower. But I think the thing you can't or you shouldn't try to squelch is the ambition of some young people. It was the only way I felt I could express myself. I wasn't the greatest intellect then. I got much smarter after high school. But it was a wonderful time, and it distracted me from the woes of the world.
Yes.
Really,
of course,
the woes
you were very
of the world.
Young, so
yeah.
You were very fertile in terms of being open as a sponge
yes.
to absorb all that was there for
you. And
me.
It was difficult because, you know, you're in Central Harlem, and you come home, and you're practicing Eastern Standard Speech, and
yes.
everybody else is going to the ball games and the basketball games and getting boyfriends and those kind of things, and you know, people are teasing you. So most of my high school years were by myself at the movies and in theater. But wouldn't trade it for the world.
I bet not.
No.
Now, speaking of, there's someone I hear on the line. I'm wondering who that is.
It's not me.
No, it's not you.
It can't
is there
be.
Another caller who's on that we're listening to? If so, you want to either clear the line or maybe put yourself on mute? Okay. Thank
it sounds
you.
Like somebody did.
Thank you.
Doesn't it?
Yes, it's
yeah.
quiet now.
Okay.
Now, after high school, we're still connecting these dots here. After high school, you traveled abroad to Stockholm, Sweden to go to college. That was a huge leap.
Well,
yes.
No, first I leaped to Puerto Rico.
Ah, I didn't know
I went to
Puerto
Inter-American
Rico.
University of Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And I stayed for, because I only stayed a year, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I came
in
back.
In Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico a year?
In Puerto Rico, San Juan, uh-huh. Puerto Rico. I think it was a year or two.
Uh-huh.
And because I ran out of money. I was sending myself to college. And...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think I paid for a year, and then my brother who was in the service. He paid for a few semesters,
okay.
And then I came back. And then I decided I had to be this actress, so I saved up money. I worked at this arts council, this arts federation, and met some incredible people, and then decided I wanted to live abroad
mm-hmm.
in Stockholm. And
how did you choose Stockholm?
Because I was very much into Swedish movies at the time.
Ah.
I could transform myself. I said, give me $4 to go to the movies, and I can be in that place
wow.
in about 4 minutes, honey.
Isn't
and I guess
something?
I just had a need to travel because I was heavy into foreign films.
Mm.
And it's a way that I used my imagination. And I was a virtuous girl, so I wasn't involved with any boys or anything
right.
like that. So I had
right.
to occupy my time in other people's worlds, and that's what got me to travel.
Wow. How long were you there?
A year.
And so by then, what were you? Were you like a sophomore in college, or what were you at that point?
I went to the school there just to learn the language.
Oh, okay.
Just to learn Swedish. And I had planned to go to meet Ingmar Bergman.
Of course.
I did. And do you know what? Sven Nyquist, who was his lighting designer, who worked on all of his movies. And I remember...
So you actually met him?
I met him 20 years after he was doing a movie of mine.
Isn't that true?
And I said, Sven, I came to Stockholm when I was 18 years old to look for you. He said, why didn't you come to the island? I said, I didn't know about an island. You read a magazine, you just say, oh, I guess I'll meet him going down the street.
Right.
Who knows?
Right.
None of this makes sense, Adila. Let me tell you, they were giving a cheap trip to Luxembourg, Icelandic Airlines, because it was like $200 or $300. I can't remember what it was. I got off in Luxembourg at night after I left New York and got on a bus supposedly going to Paris. I got on the wrong bus.
What?
I ended up in Germany.
You're kidding me.
No. I told the guy, some man was sitting next to me, he said, where are you going? He was supposed to be in love because it only takes a few minutes to fall in love with an 18-year-old girl with six pieces of luggage.
Right.
I said, well, I'm going to Paris now. He said, when? I said, tonight. He said, no. He said,
that
this bus is not going
funny.
To Paris. It's going to Germany. So I said, oh, wow. I said,
well, what did
man.
You do?
Well, I tried to figure out who I knew in Germany, and I remember it was a guy who joined the Air Force. I said, well, let me pretend like I'm going to visit him.
Mm.
And I went there on the air base.
Wow. What
yeah,
a story.
I'm a very flexible person.
That is so amazing.
It
now
is amazing. But God
and daring
said,
at that
they
age.
Said God,
very daring.
God, he protects babies and what? It's something
and
two
fools,
people.
They said.
And fools.
That's it.
I was the fool category.
Well, I don't know about that, but you certainly did make your way across the waters. And tell me, how did that experience enlarge how you saw the world? By
oh, it defined me. It defined me because when you realize that you take your reality everywhere you go, the world is there for your eyes to see. Nobody can block that, black or white. You know what I mean? It was really just saying, oh, because I, and somebody said, why didn't you go to Africa? I said, I don't know. I didn't have the need to go there. I wanted to see this place.
That you had been so heavily influenced through
film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I felt
you said
my,
your first, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I felt that I had something there. And then when I got there, somebody said, you know, the Swedes were the first to invade the Caribbean and Antigua.
Isn't that interesting?
And I said, you're kidding. I said, well, maybe I belonged here before. Who knows?
Who knows?
Because you learn a lot more with travel than you do in a book.
There is no question about that.
Yeah.
Certainly.
And not to tell you, I was scared as I could be. The night I was going to the airport, I kept saying, why doesn't somebody stop me? And nobody did.
Hmm.
I wanted somebody to say,
oh,
were
you encouraged to go? Your parents, did they encourage you to go?
No, they didn't encourage. My mother said, Anna, what happens if you die? I said, I'll put a tag on. They'll send the body back. You know, you're really cynical then.
But
I said, why didn't she say something before? I wanted somebody to stop me. But nobody ever stopped my imagination.
Because you were supposed to have that experience.
I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
I guess so.
Yeah. Now, you said your first break as an actor came at the New York Shakespeare Festival. What was the role, and how did you come to be cast?
Oh, I have no idea what the first role was. That was even before I went abroad. I was... Coriolanus.
Ah.
It was Shakespeare in the Park. Joe Papp used to... the Delacorte Theater.
Okay.
And I had 5 lines.
And I know you worked them.
Baby, it was James Earl Jones,
oh,
Jane White.
Gracious.
Oh, my
goodness, you're kidding me.
Robert Burns, no. No. And let me
what
tell
a
you,
way
Adela...
to get your feet wet.
I was so naive. The girl gave me a check. I held the check for a week because I thought she made a mistake.
Isn't that something?
And the following week she comes around. She said, Anna, I said, oh, I had the check that you gave me last week. And because I thought she said, Anna. And I said, yes, I have the check. Because I thought she was going to realize she made a mistake. She said, no, you can cash it. You get paid every week.
Wow.
I did not know you
were going to get paid?
No.
You were just doing it because you loved it.
Who would pay somebody who thought they were an actor? I fooled them, and they thought I was. That's why I got hired. Do you believe it?
That's
amazing. They're paying me. It was $50 a week, baby.
And that was a lot of money then.
It still is a lot of money if you never worked in theater.
If you don't have any.
If you get a showcase.
And most of us started where we didn't get paid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, you
yeah.
also performed on and off Broadway, of course, including for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rain was enough by Ntozake Shange.
Yes.
Which lady were you? What color? For those listeners who may have seen the play.
I joined
the
cast as the understudy, red, purple, and I went on as Lady in Red and Lady in Purple.
Oh,
and
Lady
I forgot
in
the
red.
Other color.
That
it was
is a
three.
Tour
to learn three
role.
Characters. That was rough.
What was rough?
Just learning three different parts.
Okay. As
not one.
And not knowing you'd ever go up.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I did. But they usually, everybody was kind of kind, so we kind of knew.
Mm-hmm.
We had a day at least to prepare.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite stage roles that you've played over the years?
Oh, God. The Last Job. I always say that. My Last Job is my favorite.
The Last Job.
Yeah.
And which was that?
Well, the last job I had was Miss Helen in Read Between the Lines.
Mm-hmm.
I was an office temp and I got a job at Channel 13. And the gentleman who I was working for said, oh, you're not going to be attempt for long. I said, why? And he said, because you ask a lot of questions and you're very bright.
Mm.
So I said, when you're bright, that means you ask a lot of questions. I didn't understand that.
Mm.
And then I got promoted to producer.
Oh, you're ahead of me. Now you're talking about the PBS Black Variety Show.
Yeah, oh. And that came out of an office temp job.
Right.
And
you were there from 67 through 73.
I have no idea.
Well, I did my research. I'm
okay. No, I went in 70, not 60. No, 70.
Oh, then they have the records wrong.
Yeah, all the records are wrong. I'm still looking for this husband I have on the internet.
No, they don't.
I'm supposed to be married to a doctor and then another man I don't know. So I don't know how I'm married to both of them.
Well, maybe they're making their way toward you.
Well, maybe they're making their way toward me, but I don't know what my present husband is going to say when they come knocking. What's going to happen then? They're going to fight over me?
The drama will begin. And speaking of drama, many viewers see you as a comedic actor and not so much as a dramatic actor. How do you feel about dramatic work?
Well, I never did a comedy until 1986, so most people don't know me as a comedian.
Ah.
No. Every single movie I did was dramatic.
Interesting.
So when I went up
to
do,
land.
When I auditioned for a man, one of the casting people at NBC said, well, we wanted somebody with, not the producer who hired me, one of the casting people said, well, she doesn't have any sitcom experience.
Hmm.
And someone in the room said, no black actress has sitcom experience except Wheezy. It was the only black comedy you have on TV. How can you ask for that?
Louise on The Jeffersons.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, someone called in earlier at the top of the show, and they had a question for you. They wanted to know if you were a fan of the show The Jeffersons. For some reason,
of course,
that was the question. So
but everybody is a fan of
listener?
Anybody. That was black on TV. How could you not be?
Yes, yes.
The need and the love of seeing yourself and your self-reflection. Who was it? Everybody, whether they admit to it or not, was a fan of every black thing that came on TV.
Well, I certainly remember when I was a child and someone black came on TV, we'd say, everybody quit, come. Somebody,
yeah,
somebody
exactly.
Call us on TV. And
exactly.
Everybody would gather and get their seats because we were so proud of ourselves.
So that, and so don't pretend that, oh, yeah, whether you're a fan or not. Please, come on. Yeah, you were. You watched.
Mm-hmm.
You watched.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we came from we were one of the first people on the block who had a TV. And we all sat and watched.
Oh, we were too in my family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, TV was, you know, good for the middle class. And we had one of those plastic covers. So people thought we had color TV because it was
mm-hmm.
a screen that you got for $10 that you put inside the TV tube.
Yes.
It had green on the bottom and red on top. Yellow.
That's so funny.
And
you know,
you got a color TV. Yes.
And it was actually the cover.
Yes.
And
it was a piece of plastic that you put, like, on your window.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were we were real middle class.
Oh, I tell you. Having a TV at one time was just
with color.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Nobody had them. Nobody had them.
Right.
I know you were honored by the Directors Guild of America as one of a few African-American women to direct
yes.
the industry, and certainly that included your work as a director on the series that Ed Weinberger created,
yes.
Good News.
And all the other people whose lives I tried to direct. Yes.
What does that mean?
In person.
Oh,
in real
life. I thought that's what you meant. I'm like, who's that getting
yes.
here?
Yeah.
Do you still direct, and how did that crossover make a difference for you in terms of your career?
Well, I tell you, I would love to have the discipline to write, which I don't do because there's so many stories that have to be told.
There certainly are.
And should be to document the life we came from and the life we're going to and the life we would get back to. Because as you started out saying, everybody has a story. And I remember I was saying, I wrote an introduction to a book, and I said, the wonderful thing about growing up in Harlem is that there was a large community of people who wanted to protect their children. Why is this dog barking at the squirrels?
Isn't it? That's your
whatever,
dog.
Yes. And I don't want to be witness to me killing the dog on the radio. Go outside and talk to the squirrel. Nice. Yes. That there's so many things that bring back memories for other people. The more specific you make it, the more universal it is.
That's
you know what I'm
true.
Saying?
I
it's
do.
Like there's something. We used to go to a lot of cocktail sips when we were growing up. The church gave them, and different benevolent societies gave them, and tom-tom weddings, and all of this kind of stuff that was quite uniquely being good colored people.
Yes.
You know, and those kind of things that I think we had gotten away from with integration, but the ladies with the Sunday clothes and the fashion shows, you know. And even now, whenever I go to these church recitals, it brings back such warm memories of little kids getting up and reciting, and you were successful if you could speak to the back of the room. Nobody had to tell you to speak up. You know, and you see on the face of children when they get an applause and when they bow, it's all character building, all self-esteem building. And before you get to Hollywood, if we could just put some of that back into everyday life,
absolutely,
we would have a tremendous amount of beautiful, shiny faces that believe that they can do anything.
That's right. And that's
because a lot of times, and we have to admit, a lot of kids don't necessarily get in the home. Drugs took over at one point, and so a lot of kids were without a good, solid upbringing. And we have a lot of, I've worked a lot of charity work with out-of-home care for children. We have a large foster care system. You know, we have so much work to do, and I think the wonderful thing about being an actor and being, quote, a celebrity, is that you're still learning. You're still going in. You go and see what you can do to bring pre-needles into juvenile diabetes or epilepsy or elephantitis. I mean, everything. And I just said, my world is so expanded because of that, that you realize the acting is secondary to the charity or the bringing attention. I was just named an ambassador in Barbados because I brought a lot of visibility to autism in that island.
Okay.
You know, and it was just wonderful. Just wonderful, but it opens your world from the penitentiary. I always did work in New York, the penitentiary. I used to teach up at Rikers, a creative writing class.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a lot the internet doesn't tell you because they don't know. My life is very interesting. That's all I can say.
And very full,
but every moment I keep saying, wow, I didn't know it was going to be this good. I didn't know it was going to be that interesting.
What a blessing to be able to say that.
Yeah, you just have to live. That's why I want to do as much as I can about stopping teenage suicide. Because you just want to say, or these kids, I look at the first 48, and I just said, don't do that. You have no idea how much your eyes have to see, how much your heart has to feel. If you could just live a little longer. Just move around the corner. You don't have to stay on the block. This is not your world. The world is a huge place.
Yes, it
is. And there are places waiting for you to come and see.
There you go. And by you giving back and speaking to youth, I'm sure that's one way you're using your celebrity dumb to be able to influence our young people. And
And I influence the old ones, too. I have to hug everybody. I was downtown a few minutes ago, and a woman just put her arms out, and I just walk in them. She said, Thelma. I said, yes, baby. Thelma. And then they want to know if I'm still with my husband, Ruben. I said, yes. Yes. But isn't that wonderful to put a smile on somebody's face?
And it takes so little to do it.
Yeah.
So little.
Yeah. So we're all ambassadors of truth and love.
Yes. I wanted to get back to your career. You've been a producer, you've been a director, an actor. Which area do you enjoy most, and why is that?
I'm in the moment. So if I'm producing, I enjoy that. If I'm directing, I enjoy that. If I'm acting, I enjoy it. Maybe I'm supposed to be all of that because I don't limit it.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling good is feeling good. Affecting an audience is affecting an audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having the power to take an idea and making it, put air into it and breath into it, is as exciting as being a person.
Yes.
It's just, it's all energy.
Yes.
It's all energy. I just wish I had, and I guess it doesn't have to do it. It's,
you're cutting out a little bit on me. I don't know why that is.
I don't know why. I mean, yeah. It's
Let's
just,
take a
you
moment
just have to, you just have to do it. You just
yes.
have to. Just say, even though I didn't do it before, people are quick to define themselves as one thing. And I found from living abroad, they don't do it as much. You know? So you're everything. You're everything.
Mm.
You're journal. You know, everybody, a lot of the people I met, everybody keeps journals. Everybody takes photographs. Everybody, you know, they at a young age where I met so many people from the Slavic countries, Germany, and what the European kids do is they hike every summer. So most of them speak 4 or 5 languages.
Oh, I know.
So I was the only one that, I'm from America, and people kept asking me in Sweden, did you escape? Because that was the year of the riots. I said, escape? No.
Oh, that is funny.
No, you know,
you
but
just left.
It's the world. It's the
exactly.
world. Well, people don't know. The only thing they see is the news.
Right.
And if you're on a clip, that's the clip. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't limit it to direct or acting. I can do it all. I act every day, and I'm acting like I'm happy.
Well,
that's the best role I play.
We all act on some level daily as we need to.
Yeah.
But hopefully at the essence, what people are seeing is our true selves. Let's do a station identification break one more time.
All right,
you're listening to Adila on the BlakeRadio.com station, and my guest today is actor Miss Anna Maria Horsford. Now, I want to kind of get to another place in our interview that really deals with the industry, because I know there's some people out there who really want to get into the industry, and I really want them to have access to you in that regard. Some
mm-hmm.
who are dreamers, who are dreaming about what they would like to do with their lives. And I'd like to know, what advice would you give to those listeners out there who are interested in becoming an actor or a performer or in some way getting into the entertainment business and don't quite know yet how to do it?
Well, I think that the business has changed so much now that it's hard to talk about how you got into it before because there's a difference. I think I always tell people, if there is anything else you could do, do it.
Mm.
Anything else that gives you that much joy, do it. Because being in show business is heaven on earth and hell on earth.
Depending on your experience.
No, depending on what day it is. Depending on the day it is. Believe me, to be rejected 3 or 4 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Or don't hear anything at all.
Right.
You have to question yourself. You have to jump back on. You have to say, maybe I'm not that good. Maybe I'm not that cute. Maybe I'm too fat. Maybe I'm too... Who wants to go through all of that?
Right. And that's why when I talk to parents that want to get their children into the industry, I'm like, is it your child who wants to do this, or do you want them to do it? Because it's difficult enough for adults to deal with
yeah.
the rejection and all that we experience along the way without putting a child through that.
And not only that, the deal is, who wants to live with 200 different people inside of them?
Mm.
I've got 500 different characters. Who knows who they're talking to when they talk to me?
I hear you.
And then they say, hey, Thelma. I say, hey, D, what's your name? I said, I don't know my name. I'm anybody you want to be. Leave me alone.
Right?
Leave me alone.
Well,
I think I think the big decision, and a lot of it is, I think it's two-part. It's show and it's business. I think with the technology that faces us today, that everybody could become an artist. I think it's how your eyes see the world, whether it's tragedy, whether it's comedy, whether it's both, whether it's a mixture of both. It takes a $99 camera, and you can document. I ran on a plane, and I have to tell you, his name is Darryl Edwards, and he was my he was serving me in on Delta. And the strangest thing, I was so hungry, I didn't eat before I got on. And he looked at me, he said, oh, I'll take care of you. I said, oh, thank you, darling, a little young black boy. And he gave me a whole bunch of peanuts and was no sun chips. Well, no, it was some sun chips. And
right.
gave me drinks. He gives that. I said, well, Lord, I'm having more gas than I want to. But he was so sweet to me. Didn't bother me, so when I fell asleep, and I said, I should eat next time. Mm-hmm. When I'm getting off the plane, he says, if you have a chance, could you just look at my film? It's on YouTube.
Oh, bless his
And name. I said, oh, of course, of course. Lost the card, found the card 2 weeks after, went to YouTube, put the movie on. This is 1
you
o'clock
did.
At night. Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, 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 I'm fabulous like that.
Okay.
Put the movie on, blew my mind.
Really?
I called the boy in Philadelphia at 3 o'clock in the morning. I said, sir, I am sorry I lost your car, but I just saw your movie. I think you are incredible. Incredible. Needless
to
say.
You know what that probably did for his sense.
Well, I sent him some money because I said you have to submit this film to different film festivals.
Beautiful.
And he is, I tell you, this was so inventive. His film, it was a fabulous take on a subject we know about. And I just said, if there's anything I can do, if you write anything you want me to be in it, this guy. And I said, where did you go to school? He said, I didn't. I'm self-taught.
Isn't that something? Self-taught.
Self-taught.
Mm-hmm.
And he works for the airlines. He's, what you call it, a
flight attendant.
Flight attendant.
Amazing.
So if I could ever do anything formal, introduce him to some people or stuff, I definitely will. Because you don't know where you're going to find treasure.
Huh?
You don't know where you're going to find buried treasure.
You do not know
what
you got to
be looking for it. You have to look for it.
Mm-hmm. And he was smart enough to put himself out there and introduce himself and say,
exactly.
This is what I do and this is what I have and check it out.
And
so
he waited until I woke up. He didn't bother
him.
Me when I was trying to sleep. That's why I liked him, too.
He what?
He didn't bother me when I was trying to sleep on that plane.
Right. He
waited until I was getting off.
Isn't that? I like that.
Yes.
I like that. Well, I wanted to ask you a couple of more questions. Our time is just, I can't believe an hour is almost past.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I'm not going to be able to ask everything I wanted to ask, but one thing I do want to ask is this, or say and ask. You're a very outspoken person. You have a strong personality. How has that served or not served you in this business that we're in?
Well, I can't say. I don't know what I lost because of it, because people don't usually tell you they really don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you don't get the part because you have
right.
a big mouth. They don't tell you. So I don't know what I've lost by it. Mm-hmm. I just know that my commitment is to portray and to respect well-rounded characters.
Yes.
To go into the heart of a person, either one I'm observing or one that I am trying to create,
mm-hmm.
and give you the most secret, the deepest of thoughts that they might have.
Yeah.
I don't want to play something that I've seen 400 times.
Yes.
Because I think we all are unique in the sense that work a little harder and get something. Surprise me.
Yes.
Surprise me as the audience. Say,
and
oh, my God.
The truth is, we
yeah.
bring ourselves to every role that we do. As Stanislavski, who, of course, is considered to be the father of modern theater, once said, go from thyself. And we always do that anyway.
Yeah.
Whoever we are, we bring that essence in our work.
Yes, which means you have to live on a deeper level also,
mm-hmm.
so that you get to know yourself. Many of us don't know ourselves that well.
That is so
but
true.
Every day is a learning exercise. I'm finding out more about myself in the last 2 or 3 weeks. I'm amazed at me.
Wow.
I have to sit and smile, say, Miss Anna, is that you? Yes.
I feel you. And our time is just about up. I just want to ask one last thing.
Yes, darling.
Because I know there's some listeners out there who are thinking, oh, I want to be famous one day. Would you speak on that, what your feeling is about fame?
Oh, it's wonderful. I get upgraded all the time because I'm famous. Know what you're selling.
Yes.
To be perfectly serious, know what you're selling. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm selling my community. I'm selling my mother, my godparents. I'm selling every person I ever met in the world, in Stockholm, in Spain, in Madrid. You know, really, you know what you're selling.
Yes.
You know,
well, they've given us a notice that we're at 60 seconds. So
go, oh,
end.
My gosh. Well, all I can tell you is I'm going to sell my joy tonight.
Beautiful. And I want to end with I want to close with a quote.
Okay.
That you've attributed to your father, and which you said that he shared with you, and I quote, "It's not good enough to do for yourself. You have to do something that makes it better for generations that come after you." Clearly, your father did so, and so are you. Thanks, Anna Maria, for joining me today. Our hour went by so fast.
Thank you, Adela. Thank you.
You are so welcome. And to my listeners, you're listening to Adela on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, Channel 5. I'd like to hear from you and find out what you thought about today's show. You can reach me at website, www.adelabarnes.com. Also, help keep Blake Radio on the air by becoming a subscriber today. And remember to dance, dance, dance like nobody's watching. Enjoy your miracle today.
Bye.
Hello.